Our next reader is Christian Hockey, and his chapbook is called Our Hour. I'm going to introduce the lovely artist in the book because his last name is hard to pronounce. Ryan Mrozowski is a painter living and working in Brooklyn, New York. He has recently received his MFA from the Pratt Institute and is currently preparing for his first solo exhibit.
We're really excited to have Mattia and Christian here tonight. So, I mean, it's a really special event that they're here. Christian Hockey is the author of The Book of Funnels, first press 2004. It's a great book. He lives in Brooklyn, New York. So, Christian.
Thank you all for coming, and I haven't read for a while, so if I stumble, it just means that I'm illiterate. Most of the poems in the book are simply titled Hour. I went through sort of a phase in which titles, I don't know, somehow became irrelevant to the poem, and so I simply settled on the word Hour. And then I started sneaking in a few titles here and there. So this first poem is simply called Hour. There was a lump in the landscape. Though it had no throat, it spoke to those who got on their knees to listen to it. A titmouse landed and instantly vomited on it. Blowflies swarmed in and stuck to it. Some thought it was a hidden camera, and therefore wept all over it. In this way, it came to be a mound. My chest is a kind of topsoil. It always slips off in the rain. It has drawers for every insect. I tuck my head into my sternum. A rapid beak nibbling is the most efficient form of preening. There are glands in my cheeks. I know nothing of how they work, although I'm drawn to rubbing them against the tips of car antennae, fence posts, the end of a big toe. Often I bite the skin of my arm and let go. The indent is a circle of books, my skin a shelf submerged in the air. It marks the border of an island. How happy for the land to have an eye. A string of islands is a beautiful sight. The ocean uses them to spy on us. This puddle just winked at me. Donald doesn't like me anymore. His chest is in my teeth. He reads me to sleep at night when the wind floats the house out from under my skin into the stars, eating so many holes in the island, the sky, the weather, a sweater falling apart in my hands. I was lying on my side in a ditch, soaking my flanks in bog water, with my head propped up on an elbow, highway a few inches from my nose. Semis thundered past like sexual urges. The grass flattened its ears. My body shook. I was humming a song. This was my spot. Tadpoles are a form of punctuation. Frogs hide inside commas. A whooping crane landed and began showing off its legs. Birds go for the eyes, I thought, so I looked away, humming a song about looking away, about looking back, about my fingers wrapped around the flesh that holds the rib down to the hips, and hot mangoes rotting, the ground littered with yellow suns, drain pipe where the field ends, its dark ooze, the greenest earth. A man walks by with a giant crucifix on his back, Alaska by spring. Cars speed up to pass him, which makes sense. Even the whooping crane leaves without a sound. My jaw is wired shut. I'm humming a song about cleaving, the body drifting apart, and what keeps us from dissolving at the first drop of rain. My left flank almost marinated, a sprig of rosemary between my lips. Robots have been dispatched to remove me. All fruit mirrors the sun, a black seed against my heart. A black car driving past, buffeting my chest, and a cell phone lands right in front of my face. It's all right, I whisper into it. a French donkey called a plateau, whose long ropes of fur drag along the ground, was also used in the mid to late 18th century to polish floors. We exchanged looks, all three of us, and mine was totally better. It had rose-colored sequins glued along the hemline and the word sneezeweed in one pocket and an open window with the sound of cows ripping through spring grass, filtering through it. We were filtering through it. We were filters. We had to use our tongues to remove the pollen collecting in the corners of our eyes, which were oversized, slightly joined, lidless. A squirrel mounted the bottom of a drain pipe and waited there expectantly. It was kind of sexual, although Morty observed it was just a rat with a beautiful ass. In fact, in the original Latin, we exchanged looks again, and this time blonde women in gold lamé jumpsuits handed out birds with brand names sewn into their breasts. Their beaks were frozen open. I'd never seen a bird pant. I threw it up into the air, but it dropped softly to the cement, so I stomped on it. I don't know why. Such is the nature of instinct and the vertical surge of skyscrapers, porcini mushrooms, the invisible teeth of lichen sinking into a stone. How blushing is one part sincerity, one part stupidity, the clarity of a line of drool swinging from an infant's glossy chin. From such a distance, it was hard to tell why he whacked the side of his head against the air. He paused, and the dogs paused with him, listening. That poem was called Water in the Ear. From high shelves, I took down laughter without a sound. It was late, faces opening on the television, dew collecting on the small hands of squirrels. Some creatures move every time they blink a few inches. I opened my eyes, you were in my life, hand a little lower on my spine. Although always the presence of tires burning holes through the night. Some creatures move a few inches each time they flinch. These are the hardest to shake hands with. If you walk slow enough, people will stare at you, give you money, perhaps a week. We scattered at the first sign of rain, but strong and simply stood there, water gushing from the holes in his shoes. I would like to be a drain pipe, any way to serve the rain. Imagine a squirrel wrapping its hands and feet around your neck. Some people are made entirely of neck matter, yellow cones used to divide highways. And the beauty of Parmigianino is that he painted the Madonna from the perspective of the infant Christ sucking on a breast, looking up at the high tower rising to a little shelf where the face sits, the one with a smile that fits perfectly across her mouth like a label. And this next poem is called Our Blue Yodel Number One, which I think is a Jimmy Rogers song title, but I thought it would lead to Blue Yodel Number Two, Number Three, Number Four, and it never did. Sewn inside a left hip, a highway paved with the blue tongues of coyotes, a song, a blue song, I am far from the sound of your pupils, a shower curtain, the color of your body behind it. I remember a candy that left your lips, and when it left, your lips turned blue. And the mannequin at the front of science class with its blue, detachable liver. My heart in high school was constantly popping out. It was okay. It was plastic anyway. And Rhonda, the bruise above your right eye was the center of a blue storm I wanted to walk through and would have. I'm sorry I walked up to you and tried to lick it. And this is called Hour of Secret Agents.
That's my favorite.
The code word he whispered just before letting go was code word. Asshole, I thought, watching it get smaller and smaller until it ended in a puff of dust. Where it began, I thought again, and spun around. The landfill stretched on for miles. I heard the voices of lost products beneath me. My wheelbarrow was missing a wheel. A red bird flew by, as if on a mission to flee this landscape as soon as possible. The charred body of an infant crawled out of a plastic bag. I stepped back, covering my mouth. It crawled a little further, then collapsed. A pre-recorded voice announced it was feeding time. I masticated my last handful of Brazil nuts, but it took forever. By the time I was finished, I'd forgotten what I was doing and swallowed. Nobody wanted you anyway, I shouted when it began to cry. My wheelbarrow was missing a wheel. I'll never get out of here. It was just a barrel. I flipped it over on top of the infant. Ancient graves, I wrote in my notebook, are where the living feel most alive. A bulldozer started up, two mounds over. Seagulls swarmed its yellow bucket, raising piles of blue surgical gowns to the sun. The skin on my face tightened. The bird with the red breast flew by again, precisely in the same direction, which confused me. The rubber soles of my shoes were burning. Coils of smoke rose between fissures. From the tip of a far-off mound, a CD-ROM repositioned the sun straight into my eyes. Although it could have been a signal, the permission I was waiting for, the sign I was clear to return, was once again unknown, or no longer known, a night sky, the honesty of stars, a bowl of glass oranges centered on a table, centered in a room that had never been opened, or if it had, by a trembling white glove. The infant was still crying in its makeshift grave. The red bird flew by again, this time in my mind. And then, maybe I'll... read, maybe two more poems. This one is, titled, Unwritten Poems. One was tied to a fence post, bawling. Another was little more than a smudge left behind by a forehead resting on a pane of glass. A third was traumatized during childhood by a water pick, while another formed a deepening fetish for the rudders of submarines. One had a bloodshot eye, one eyelash left, while another poem was a cell phone hurled into a toilet. One poem was arrested for excessive public prayer. Another, excessive pubic hair. One fell in love with the word prom. One was a necklace of living bees. One moved like a grasshopper trying to outrun a lawnmower. Another bushwhacked in the nerve factory. One spent the entire poem holding, out of boredom, a socket wrench up to its eye socket, while another argued vision is a kind of invisible suction action. This particular poem was unable to pull its eyes away from the TV. This poem had a round, golf ball-sized hole in the back of its head. This poem, the light shining when it sleeps face down from that hole. I'll read one more. I have a friend, Jen Bourbon, who has a friend who's here tonight, Bruce, and she is a Brooklyn artist and poet, and also a new editor of Jubilat, the magazine that I edit. And she showed me a series of drawings that she was doing of Glenn Gould's chair. And for those, I thought since I was in Canada, I would break out my Canada poem. Probably an utterly flawed gesture, but but she did a series of drawings of his chair that, of course, that he carried everywhere with him and gave concerts from. It was a chair that he learned piano as a child and then never left it behind. Glenn Gould's chair. It was a miniature chair. It was a wooden chair. He brought it with him everywhere. Some say it allowed him to remain a child, reaching up to the high, white keys, or that his fingers moved more freely once freed by the weight of his arms. Year after year, he played on the chair. When the upholstery fell apart, he sat on the wooden slats. In certain recordings, one can hear it creaking. It was keeping time. It was a piece of time. He sat on time, and eternity was the endless variation of tiny hammers kissing a string drawn through the ears of the ears of the audience, through the microphones, the speakers, my headphones. And when he finished, he stood up and folded the chair. These are the most complex of all chairs. They're mostly air. He knew music would be nothing without air, and this is why one can hear him breathing, grunting behind the music. He was making sure it was there. Some even argue that his ass, while playing, never actually touched the chair.